Greetings and great hope. In this time that we're in now, this period of history, we find ourselves in the midst of a transition. At one time, vast numbers of Americans believed in God, and our nation grew to be the richest and most powerful in the world. But we began to take those blessings that we had for granted, and over time, an illness began to develop. And COVID has its role to play, but it's not the illness I'm speaking of today. My point is not a physical illness at all. Instead, it's a growing emotional illness. It is spiritual apathy. And today I hope to warn believers of this malaise. We are witnessing a trend of indifference to people, things, and life in general in many cases. And today, I want us to consider spiritual apathy. As we live each day, people feel the threat of the COVID epidemic or pandemic that we have today. They sense the threat of our economy. It's very weak. And there's a movement to remove many of our freedoms going on. The result is that many people today are letting go of the things that they once cared about, things that they were once involved in, and things that they loved. And so step by step, an apathy is infecting our society. Good and decent passions, feelings, and interests are bleeding away. So as author MacLeish wrote one day, he said this, "One of our worst crimes is to no longer have feelings, and there has likely been no other civilization in which lethargy, apathy, and the snake-like sin of coldness of the heart was more common than that found in the modern technological civilization that we live in today." In our time, apathy is reflected in a lack of hope or enthusiasm for life. As a result, America's future has come to a crossroads, really, and that crossroad presents what I think is an enormous threat to us as a nation. Good teachers are frustrated by the passive nature of students. Workers complain of the company's indifference to their employees. Many sense that their profession is not meaningful anymore, and it's a plague that's developing slowly but ever so surely. So let's go to 1 Kings 9. These trends are changing the values of many people in our society. Individuals are caring less and less about our history and our laws. And more important, this drift can affect the faith of God's people. Moreover, the tendency is not unique to our age. It's a pattern. It's a pattern that has affected the generations of the past, and it's affecting us today. And I fear its destructive nature will, or could at least, and likely will infect God's people to one degree or another in our age. So consider King Solomon, for example. His father David had unified the nation of Israel. In time, King David died. And he left Israel united and strong. And then Solomon became king. And in a sincere prayer, Solomon asked God for wisdom. And the Almighty responded with these words in verses 4 through 7. "If you will walk before me, as David your father walked, in integrity of heart, and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded you, and you'll keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom upon Israel forever, as I promised David your father, saying, there shall not fail of you a man upon the throne of Israel. But if you or your children shall at all turn from following me, and will not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel out of the land which I have given to them, and this house which I have hallowed, for my name will I cast out of my sight, and Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among all people." So let's go over to Proverbs 1. God answered and offered Solomon enormous wisdom. The young king had sought understanding, and his new profound intellect was a supernatural gift from God. So Solomon began to write passionate and inspiring words to the people of Israel. He was inspired to seek God's wisdom and ever deeper understanding. And he wrote Proverbs to motivate others to grow in wisdom. And so we read in Proverbs 1, verse 1, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsel, to understand a proverb, and the interpretation, the words of the wise, and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord," he says, "is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." So God spoke through this wise king, who was now the leader of Israel, and Solomon encouraged his subjects to love wisdom, to seek it, to use it. And he wrote of the wisdom that he saw in life, and he inspired God's people. And with the gift of wisdom, King Solomon influenced so many others, and he taught them how wisdom is found everywhere in life. Verse 20 through 22, "Wisdom can be found wherever we might look," is the point. Proverbs 1, verse 20, "Wisdom cries out without. She utters her voice in the streets. She cries in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates. In the city she utters her words, saying, 'How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity?' And the scorner delight in their scorning, and fools, they hate knowledge." And so his point was, wisdom is on display in our everyday experiences. Just look around and think about what we see. And wisdom is found in the life of those who succeed. It's also found when we fail. Further, as we grow in wisdom, we understand why sin is so wrong. Ultimately, wisdom is manifest in respect toward God and His laws and His way of life. With enormous supernatural wisdom, Solomon taught the people. He instructed them to accept correction when they were wrong. And he taught them, don't justify yourselves when we sin. And he warned about being apathetic when it comes to good and evil. But think, it's ironic. That's exactly what happened to him, as we'll see in time. He took his marvelous gift of wisdom for granted. And God warned Israel what would occur if they refused correction. So in verse 23, Solomon recorded this warning. "Turn you," he says, "at my reproof. Behold, I'll pour out my spirit unto you. I'll make known my words unto you, because I've called and you refused. I've stretched out my hand and no man regards." And so he continues here, speaking God's words, "But you have set at naught all my counsel and would have none of my reproof. I also then will laugh at your calamity. I'll mock when your fear comes. And when your fear comes as desolation, and your destruction comes as a whirlwind, then distress and anguish will come upon you. Then shall they call on me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me, for that they hated knowledge, and they did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would have none of my counsel, they would despise all my reproofs, and therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way, and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whosoever hearkens unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. What a wonderful hope God presented, and correction as well. But as wise as Solomon was, as time passed, his zeal for God waned. He began to lose interest in teaching the people, and new interest developed, and that was building his projects, building projects. And he spent about 13 years building his own personal home, and he lavishly covered much of his house with gold. After his house was finished, he spent 7 years building God's temple. Ecclesiastes 1, if you will. Possessing enormous intellect and wisdom, Solomon became a great man, but he also became accustomed to wealth. His new normal became status, wealth, power, and yes, women. And this led him to lose his early zeal for decency and godly works. He left us then an example of where easy success can lead a person. Solomon began to sense a boredom for what he had taught others. It was so obvious, and it had taken time, had taken up much space in his life after he had taught the people this. In time, the king's values then began to change. There were no more great building projects. He began then to lose his devotion to the wisdom that comes only from God. It slowly eroded, and he began to look to new things to interest him. As a consequence, he began to take a more negative view of life. And I argue that Solomon also wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. At this point in his life, the king felt that he had been there and done that. He wondered what was left for him to accomplish, and at this point he began to be affected by apathy. There were no longer great works to do, and he wondered what could be done that was not already done. And so Solomon had enjoyed a fairly easy life. He did not have to fight wars like his father, and after time there seemed very few challenges for him. There were no more great accomplishments to glory in, and it led him to a kind of half-hearted spiritual life. And so Solomon ultimately turned to pleasure. And so life was beginning to inch forward with a kind of boredom accompanying it. So in Ecclesiastes 1:1-18, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." And then he says, "What profit does a man have for all of his labor, which he takes under the sun? One generation passes away, another generation comes, but the earth abides forever, and the sun also arises, and the sun goes down. It goes back to its place where it arose, and the wind goes forth toward the south, and it turns about under the north, and it whirls about continually, and the wind returns again according to its circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea's not full. Under the place from where the rivers come, there they return again. All things," he says, "are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye, it's not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that has been, that's the thing which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there's no new thing under the sun." Can you see the boredom this brilliant man was experiencing? He says, "Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It's already been of old time, which was before us. And there's no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. And I, the preacher, was king over all Israel and Jerusalem. And I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under the sun. This is a sore travail that God has given to the sons of man to be exercised with it. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, Behold, all is vanity. It's just vexation of spirit. And that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. And I communed with my own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and I've gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me. In Jerusalem, yes, my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, and I perceived this, its vexation of spirit. Just frustration, for in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge also increases sorrow. So you begin to see this turn to a negative approach to life and to the things in it. So 1 Kings, if you will, 1 Kings 11. At this point, Solomon was no longer preaching wisdom. His focus was now helping the people that he had striven to do so much in the beginning. It was beginning to erode, and now he found a new interest. His focus was beginning to change, and he used his wisdom to make treaties with foreign kings. And as a part of these treaties, he married the various kings' daughters. And over time, his passion for godly wisdom began to wane. He no longer listened to his own words that he had penned for others. He experienced boredom, and his apathy grew. And finally, his interests turned to personal pleasure, and his boredom led to a self-indulgence. So we see this here in 1 Kings 11, verse 1. But King Solomon, it says, loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Amorites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, neither shall they come into you, for surely they will turn away your heart from other gods, or after their gods. Solomon claved unto these in love, and he had 700 wives, princesses, 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Amorites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he went not fully after the Lord, as did David his father. So today, if you'll go to Revelation 3, I want us to think about the example of Solomon, because I think there's a striking parallel to us in our time. There are lessons from this wise king that I think can be a warning to us. Like Solomon, we have human nature, just like every other human being. And our generation has lived in a time of relative peace. We've enjoyed a strong and stable economy. However, we've watched as our nation began to change bit by bit. In our beginning, we were considered a Christian nation, but now our government has turned into a money-making machine. In religion, spiritual values have dulled, and God's church too. At our initial calling, we were given the gift of God's Spirit. With that Spirit, we were able to access the wisdom of God, understand it, and sometimes, in many cases, we could apply it in our lives. And with God's Spirit, we could understand the Scriptures for the first time, deep and profound as they are. And as we grew spiritually, there was a sense of excitement. We understood God's plan for mankind, that we could, in fact, be children of God. We understood God's desire for humanity. Inside us, we carried the hope of the kingdom. However, each day we all experience our ups and downs. It's normal. And we've learned much truth, but we can also begin to take God's truth for granted. Solomon was much wiser than us. And that's what he did. That's what happened to him. Without daily commitment, human nature will edge in and it will eventually work until it takes over. And we've got to guard against that. Our focus can move to the present rather than the future. And the result is that we've heard hundreds of sermons. We can begin to think there's not much new anymore. I mean, who has anything really new? It's the same thing. We can experience what he did. We can understand where he was coming from. But today, some think of the truth as if it's the same old doctrine. There's not much more to discover. As a result, our passion for the truth, it actually can become clouded. That is what Solomon experienced. He repeatedly taught the people God's doctrine, but in time, it all seemed to drift into the mundane. So my point is that Solomon's example can, and I think does, apply to us today. God inspired the Apostle John to write about our age and our time that we're living in today. And he wrote seven church eras. He wrote about them occurring until the return of Christ, from his day all the way to Christ's return. We now find ourselves living in the last of those seven eras. The Church of Philadelphia reflected that of the sixth era. In Revelation 3, verse 7 through 13, it says, "Unto the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these things says he that's holy, he that's true, and he that has the key of David, and he that opens, and no man shuts, and no man opens. I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door, and no man can shut it. For you have a little strength, and have kept my word, and have not denied my name. Behold, I'll make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they're Jews, and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before your feet, and to know that I've loved you, because you have kept the word of my patience. I also will keep you from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the earth to try them that dwell on the earth. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which you have, and let no man take your crown. And I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which comes down from out of heaven from my God. And I will write upon him my new name. And he that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches." Historically, our era has been an exciting one. In the beginning, God's people were very few and very far between. New technical inventions developed, however, like radio and television, and these tools, they magnified the preaching of the gospel. Herbert Armstrong was introduced to the Church of God in 1933. He began preaching on the radio, and over time the church broadcasted the truth virtually around the world. Thousands of people were called to the truth, and we grew in size and gorgeous building projects, and we were respected among world leaders. And during this time, each of us were called by God, and the Almighty gave us His Spirit, and that Spirit led us to understanding the Scriptures, and we found the wisdom that was in God's plan for mankind. We were humbled, realizing that God had called us, and we grew in faith and spiritual confidence. Then, two factors occurred. It was like Solomon's story. First, we came to understand that the false wisdom of this world. Then, by living God's law in our lives, many were promoted and successful in this life. And something shocking occurred, ending this beautiful era. The individuals that God used to found this era died, and new church leaders sought acceptance, recognition, and wealth. And bit by bit, the new leaders made changes in doctrine. Their goal of self-acceptance or acceptance led to the inclusion of false doctrine, and many stayed with them and accepted their false doctrines. Finally, other ministers left the apostate organization and vast numbers began their own corporations. So besides the convulsions within the church, world news was changing. National leaders began heading toward more government and power. The result? We're now seeing rioting, abuse of power, and flawed judgments. Thus, our lives and our culture and faith have been affected. We're no longer united in truth, doctrine, or our policies. Our passion has in many cases slipped away, as Matthew wrote in Matthew 24 and verse 12, "And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." And in this environment, decent and well-meaning members have let down, and apathy has affected many of the saints today, and it can affect us just as it did Solomon. We may begin to think that there's really not much more to learn. We all basically know the biblical doctrines in our mind. We're still commandment keepers. However, we have been around for some time, and little is now new to us. And some others, many people, I think, no longer pray as long or as intense as we once did. For many, our personal Bible study has declined. We've entered that last, the seventh era. In Revelation 3, continuing on, verse 14, "And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, These things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. He says, I know your works, that you're neither cold or hot. I would that you were cold or hot. But if you're not cold or hot, you understand what you're... This is almost like a definition of apathy. So then, because you are lukewarm and you're neither cold nor hot, I'll spew you out of my mouth. Because you say I'm rich and I'm increased with goods and have need of nothing. But don't you know that you're wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked? God help us. I counsel thee, he says, to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that you may be rich, and white raiment, that you may be clothed, and that the shame of your nakedness does not appear. And anoint your eyes with eye salve, that you may see. And then he says, as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. So this last era of the church was told that that they just weren't cold or hot. And this is very close to, I say, the definition of apathy. They're just not turned on or turned off, and people are just going along without passion for the work that we once had. And this is the problem with the last era of the church. They know the truth. They go to church services, but there isn't one church anymore. It's been broken into hundreds, actually, of splinter groups, and in some cases, ministers must serve five congregations. Some groups, as a result, have to have computer services. That is, they've lost the desire to attend without a minister, and with that, there's been a loss of passion. We have already heard the essence of many of today's messages. They may seem like a repeat of past messages in a new suit, and so many are not motivated as they once were. It's old hat in many cases. And on top of this, we are watching our nation become corrupt. That is, America. Further, as we also make mistakes in our walk with God, and when we do, it takes some wind out of our sails. We're not perfect. And so it's difficult, the path that we are on, that we're called to overcome ourselves, our own human nature. But as we see world news, and God's people then should start growing in their commitment, as we see the direction our nation is heading, as we see the hostility, the violence, the anger, and the abuse of power, this should have an impact on us, realizing this. The end is near. We should become more passionate towards our spiritual goals. We should seek God's kingdom more fervently. And as we see our nation failing, we should step up our good works. We should pray, study, and fast more. But this, that we knew would eventually happen, is happening, and we need to be on alert. We need to be more passionate in our goal. We need to fervently seek a relationship with God and seek His kingdom on a larger scale, a deeper depth. Ecclesiastes 12. Atrophy will always occur if we do nothing to combat it. So today I want to say this. Let's make a commitment. Let's strive to increase our effort to build our bond with God. And on another level, we all love ourselves. The more we put ourselves into something, the more we tend to love it. So let's put more of ourselves into God's calling. Let's learn from Solomon. It's time to get our fire back. Our Father created us to live with passion. We're not meant to live in a stagnant, unexciting life. We serve a great and glorious God. And we were called by Him for a unique and wonderful purpose. And that purpose is to be a reflection of Him now in this life and ultimately as a spirit being as He is. So let's not allow ourselves to let down in our quest. Don't let apathy steal our zeal for God's kingdom. So let's put more effort into practice of God's way. Let's pray God will help us restore our passion. And let's commit to reigniting the flame. Preserve our zeal for our Father and for His kingdom and His way of life. In all of Solomon's wisdom, he understands where it ends. Toward his end, he understood and wrote this, Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. So, brethren, let's focus on our hope during the time that we have left. That's the best we can do.